Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me.
Happy Jack Kirby's birthday, Corey.
And it's also, because it's Jack Kirby's birthday, it's Read Comics in Public Day.
Yes.
It, for the 50th time, it's your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires we call the internets, it's him! Little Crazy Rider.
Little.
How you doing today, Joe?
Oh, I'm happier than Oprah on a baked ham. I'm telling you, I'm just doing great. You know, that came from a Simpsons show years ago, and I'm still getting mileage out of it.
So what's been going on in wonderful New Mexico? Did you get hit by a hurricane?
No. Matter of fact,
was there an earthquake?
Well, no.
But was there any sort of natural disaster?
Well, I did have a Sonic's burger, and I've been real gassy. But other than that, no, I guess everything's normal here. I mean, it's like 100 degrees during the day, but it's a dry heat, so it's really nice. 70 at night. I mean, it's it's really weird because I'll go home at night from the airport and you'll see these huge thunderheads to the south, to the north, to the east, to the west, but nothing hits Farmington. I mean, I sat the other day and I watched this storm come rumbling up from the south. And it looked like it was going to come across Farmington and drop some much needed rain. And you're watching lightning bolts just flashing like crazy. And it looked like it just went, Farmington, and veered off to the west. And we never got any rain.
Maybe they're scared of you.
Yeah. Well, you know, I haven't showered in a while. And I do got to admit, as tasty as Sonic burgers are, they don't agree with me.
Well, this is our
50th episode.
Not to say
if anybody from Sonic is listening, if you want to send me coupons for free burgers, I can be persuaded to change my mind.
I don't know if Sonic has anything I can eat, being a vegetarian.
Yeah, there is that. I mean, they get a lot of fixin' on their hot dogs and stuff. You could probably say, tell you what, throw everything you got, cheese, beans, tomatoes, peppers, you know,
toast
on a hot dog bun. Oh no, they got French sticks. Toast French.
Here we
sticks.
Go.
The ones here, they serve at 24 hour or whenever they're open. So you can have breakfast anytime you want.
You know what? I like that idea. Why don't I just take a hot dog bun and stuff it full of French toast sticks?
You've stuffed it full of Stranger Things, but I'm not supposed to talk about that.
It's our 50th episode.
Woohoo!
Now, one of the ideas I had was that I go through all of the past episodes looking for the best bits we've done, the most intelligent conversations, for us to host a clip show. Because they used to do that every year.
That is so decay.
Every year on sitcoms, they would have, you know, where they would sit around and, do you remember that one time when we, and then they'd fade and they'd do that and, the thing is, they could do the clip show, and it would take like 5 minutes for the actors and 2 months for the people putting the shows together. And then I thought, you know what? I don't have 2 months to sit and go through all of our old podcasts and listen for the best parts and go into all that. So instead, we're just going to do a regular episode.
Yeah, there is that. Because we're just regular guys.
Now we could also talk about our favorite number 50 comic books. You know, when comic books hit their 50th issue.
Actually, you know, you could, because I'm about 1,500 miles away from my comic collection, so I can't look up nothing.
Well, here's the problem with doing it now.
Mm-hmm.
How many comics make it to issue 50? The ones that are still going get rebooted.
Yeah, what is that?
So, believe it or not, kids, this here mess of a radio show does have sponsors.
I don't believe it. Name them. Well, right now, name them. Right now, I don't believe them. I want to hear it.
Right here. Do you hear that? You haven't heard that in a while, have you? That's money paid to us by our sponsor way back at the beginning of this show. I still have the $20 bill that was given to us by Worldwide News, our first sponsor, Worldwide News at .solitairerose.com. Part of the Solitaire Rose family of websites, Worldwide News is the story of the lowest rated cable newscast and the people who work there. And believe it or not, they are the only ones that didn't get swept up in the Hurricane Irene stuff over the weekend. Worldwide News is written by me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard, and drawn by Dainty Dan Moore. Our other sponsor, we have two sponsors, is DreamHost.com. DreamHost.com is the best web host in the whole world. Now, there are other web hosts out there that you could go to. Some of them have real expensive ads with models, like GoDaddy. And if you go to GoDaddy, you're not going to get good service. They're spending money on fancy models and commercials on the Super Bowl.
Unless GoDaddy wants to give us $20 to talk nice about them.
You know, Joe, you keep going on about how you want the $20. I know how you can get the $20.
How's that?
You go to DreamHost.com. You sign up for a website. You put in the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, and you get $20 off your first year's order.
Cool.
And those are our sponsors.
And this is probably a good time, too, to mention that while they're not a sponsor, we do like to plug them because the Minnesota Comic Book Association's, I'm sorry, I screwed it up already, the Midwest Comic Book Association, because it's bigger than just Minnesota. Their FallCon comic book celebration is October 15th at the Minnesota State Fairgrounds in the Progress Center. Now, the interesting thing is even right now, as we're celebrating Jack Kirby's birthday, the Minnesota State Fair is going on. Now, if you've never been there, this is the place in all of its glory. And it's just tons of stuff. I mean, you can go to their website and just check it out. I mean, they've got some really cool rock bands playing, and you know, naturally, since I'm, you know, long ways from home, I'm not gonna get my deep fried Twinkie on a stick or stop by the Spam House or even get macaroni and cheese on a stick. But I will mention,
why don't you just say I'm not gonna have a heart attack?
Well, I didn't say that, but I will mention that, of course, Uncle Nicky, the guy who is pretty much the brains behind the FallCon, he's got himself the 1919 root beer booth. And if you stop by and mention you heard it on the Crazy Comics and Stuff podcast, he'll probably comp you some of the best tasting root beer ever brewed. It's actually brewed in New Ulm. I think I went last year, we talked about it. It's just one of those breweries that during Prohibition, they stopped brewing beer and brewed root beer. So, and they've still done it to this day. And the only way you can get it is either in a keg or you can find a liquor store that has it and you can fill yourself up a couple jugs of it. Anyways, at the fair, he's just serves gallons of it. He's got root beer floats, and it's probably the best place to stop and get. I don't know what the weather is like back home, but it's a good place to stop and get a nice refreshing beverage. And like I said, if you find Nicky and you tell him and blame it on us, he'll probably comp you. I have never heard Nick come back to me and say, hey, I had somebody from the podcast come up and say you'd comp me a root beer. So maybe this would be the first year, or maybe Nick just does it because that's the type of guy he is. I mean, if you know Nick, your money's no good at his booth. If you don't know Nick, it's still, I think, year after year, named one of the best deals at the fair. So check it out.
Speaking of checking stuff out.
Oh, you're talking about the Marvel 2-in-1 thing and meets the Blues Brothers comic I found? Did you see?
Well, it's close.
Do you remember that link? Do you remember that link I sent? I think it was from David Watkins, who we'll be talking about in the upcoming months because he's relaunching or still launching his comic book company. But he's got this website called Hey Not So Fast. And on it are literally tons of comics that, well, they don't exist in this particular reality. I mean, you're talking like Marvel 2-in-1, Thing and Futurama, Thing and Space Ghost, Thing meets Tarzan, and one of my favorites with a real photographic color, Thing and the Blues Brothers.
Oh, jeez.
And it goes on too, because he also has, and again, this isn't David doing it. He's linking it from some other guy, but he also has like Batman. Remember the old Brave and Bold? Batman,
yeah.
And Battle of the Planets, Batman and Boba Fett, Batman versus Darth Vader. And he even throws a couple of Spider-Man too, or the Spider-Man team ups, you know, Spider-Man and Amazing Man, you know. So I'll throw the link up, and I'll throw the actual website that these come from. It's just a lot of fun. I mean, you'd think I would pay good money to see these comic books. I mean, Batman and crew, you know. Batman and Harvey Birdman, attorney at law.
Actually, no. I was thinking that, you know, those comics must have come from an alternate universe. And DC just announced something that makes me very, very happy. They announced it up in Canada.
Me too. I had that on my list of things to talk about, but go ahead.
Earth 2 is returning. That's right. The Justice Society, which has been absent from the DC 52. And I was very upset because even though I haven't much liked the Justice Society since Geoff Johns left, it's still one of my favorite concepts. It's one of my favorite books and probably close to my favorite superhero team. They weren't listed in the 52. And now it's been announced that they will be coming back and DC will have an Earth 2 that they will be on. And it may even be an entire line of Earth 2 books. They didn't announce that much of it. But I would be giddy, just giddy, if Earth 2 is coming back. And if they are smart, and I don't know if they are, they bring in Roy Thomas to do something.
I was thinking the same thing.
I don't think there's anybody in the world who knows as much and loves Earth 2 as much as Roy Thomas. And all he's doing right now is editing Alter Ego. And after reading Jim Shooter's blog, even though they didn't get along on a personal level, Shooter will say that Roy was one of the best story structure writers he ever dealt with and an impeccable editor. So, you know what? Give the guy a bone. Let him edit the books. Let him write a miniseries. Let him do something, darn it. So that's my news.
That's pretty much all I had. I mean, it's basically I read through all this news stuff. And, you know, Corey and I have talked about this. And really, we're not the cutting-edge podcast for news. I mean, we'll be lucky if we can get this thing up before Jack Kirby's next birthday. But seriously, I'll give props to where props is due. I mean, Corey, you're working a full-time job. God knows what other goofy things you're doing. I mean, gaming, podcasting, comicking, and all the editing is on you. I mean, I get the fun part. I get to show up and you know, talk comic books, one of my favorite subjects, with my best friend. But I don't have to do the work to get this baby up. So that's probably the nicest thing I'm going to say about you the rest of the year. So
that's probably the nicest thing you've said about me since 1996.
No, 1997. Remember I said, hey, good job with the quarter books. But, you know, that was back at the shop. So
speaking of the quarter books and the shop and all that stuff, you know what? Let's go ahead. Let's do some short tales from the shop, because there have been a few I've wanted to tell that we just never get to.
Sure.
Sure. And Tales from the Shop has a sponsor.
Okay. Yes.
Tales from the Shop is sponsored by Chris B., who is a local musician who's touring all over the place right now. You can go to her website at broomhildamusic.com. On Thursday, September 1st, and this podcast will be up before then, she is performing at Lestat's Coffee House in San Diego, California. And that is at 3343 Adams Avenue, San Diego, California. She doesn't have a time yet. The ticket price hasn't been announced yet, but she's on her way there. She stopped at a few places, did some open mic gigs, did some gigs in Wyoming, of all places. When she gets back to Minnesota, you should get on her mailing list, because she's having gigs just kind of pop up out of the blue. She had a few right before she left, where she emailed people earlier that day to let them know that she was performing. And on one of those gigs, I got to be honest, 15 people showed up. So get on the mailing list, start getting to these gigs. You'll want to see her before she's huge. And she has written the music, which I'll play now. Which is the theme for Tales from the Shop. And we're running a contest where if you write lyrics and they get chosen, not only will she perform the lyrics to Tales from the Shop, but you'll get a nice, shiny, clandestine hardcover written and drawn by Alan Davis.
Cool.
So Tales from the Shop, I have been pressing Joe to tell this story since we started the podcast. And now I have him backed into a corner.
Oh, not really. Joe, I'm in an oval room.
You're going to need to tell the story of when you locked Eric King in the shop.
Ah, good old Eric. Eric King was every comic book store's favorite customer. He would come in with the previews. He basically ordered one of everything. And for the most part, picked up everything. And, and what had happened was, is we had a routine. I think it was Friday nights.
It was Friday nights.
The guys would come together and we'd all get together and, you know, hang out at the shop. And when the shop closed at 8, we'd all go down to Angelo's Pizza, which was maybe like 3-4 blocks away, have some pizza, spaghetti, whatever. And then we'd come back and hang until people had to stop hanging. And I would do the deposit and whatever. Now, Eric was, this was back when comics showed up on Friday. Eric had to have been an investor, and he had to be a perfectionist, because he would come in and he would grab the entire stack of a certain book and lay them out on the back issues and look and inspect each and every one for the best copy. Which, you know, I got no problems with, but if you're a guy saying you're jumping in trying to get that first copy of Justice League America, all of a sudden this guy's got every single one and he won't let you look at any of them. It didn't happen much, but, you know, and I don't think I ever had to tell Eric not to do it, because I think most of the comic guys would just walk in and grab one right off his pile. But anyways, we got to the point where Eric had come in and he'd come in late, and it must have been one of those 150 comic book days, and it took a while, and we're up to closing, and we're like, you know, Eric, do you want to, we're going to close the shop. You know, do you want to come with us, or do you want to stay back and do comics? And he goes, could I stay back?
And Now, hold on. I'm going to give a little more to this story.
All right.
Eric may have been someone that comic shop owners liked, but those of us who hung out at the comic shop were not really big fans of Eric. Eric had a personality deficit. Now, Joe and I will talk comics, but we also talk movies and TV and this and that and the other. And Eric, he would talk comics, but it was odd. He wouldn't talk about the stories or the art. He would talk about certain poses and certain drawings, and just the way he looked at comics was very different from everybody else. And if you tried to talk about any other subject at all, he would just kind of look at you as if you had spoken to him in French, and he would continue with whatever he was already talking about. So
I recall once, and I don't know if it was you or Butch, but somebody had asked a question about Eric asked some question about a comic book, and somebody turned to him and said, Eric, what are you talking about? You should know the answer to that. You read every single comic publication ever made. And I mean, he did. You're talking Wizard, Comics Journal, Comic Buyer's Guide, Vantage, Heroes Illustrated. Heck, I don't know what the other. I mean, and this was like the early 90s, maybe into the mid 90s that Eric was a customer of ours.
So when Joe said, "Do you want to come along?" The look Pat gave Joe, if Joe would have been looking at Pat, Joe
which
would
I
have
try
been,
not to.
Joe would have been turned to stone.
Because yeah, my attitude was, is I wanted
Butch
to come,
actually which, said out loud, "Oh, I don't know about that."
But yeah, he asked, I believe he asked if he could just stay, or did I say, if you don't come with you, I'm going to lock you in the store. And he said,
I don't remember. It was one of the two.
Yeah, I forget, but I think he agreed, I'll just stay here. And I thought for a minute, okay, safety thing, we had a double lock. In other words, it's a key on the inside and outside. It wasn't like a deadbolt. And I just told Eric, I said, if there's an emergency, you can let yourself out the back. Because this was at the time, this was the 1,000, maybe it was 800 feet at the time, but it was a smaller of the two hot comics that I eventually made and owned. And, you know, I locked the money, I locked the register, and we left.
And also, he hadn't turned in his previews order, which back then, what was the Cap City one?
Advanced Comics.
Advanced Comics. He hadn't turned in his Advanced Comics order, so he also wanted to finish that up because it was due the next day.
Yep.
So he was going to go through the comics to pick out his comics, and finish up his order. So, Joe, we locked the shop.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know. You might have just left on the regular security lights. I know you didn't leave on the main lights. Because one of the things we said as we walked out is, wow, we just turned out the lights on them and left, didn't we?
Yeah.
So, continue.
No, then we, so we went. We had pizza. And usually the pizza was, I'd get pepperoni, that would get sausage, extra cheese. And when we came back,
now,
he was...
The other thing about going to the pizza place, it's not like we went there, ate, and left.
No.
We went there, we hung out, we played the pinball machine, we talked to the waitress, we talked comics.
I mean,
we usually didn't get out of there till around 10, 10:30,
yeah,
and the shop closed at 8.
We were such regulars there that they usually had the front window ready for us. You know, and one of the big things was you could get a cup of ice cream at the end. And Tracy, our waitress, who we must have paid to get her kid through college or something with the tips we would leave. We would end up, she actually bought ice cream for us that would only be used for us. I mean, this is a lady who eventually, after years of badgering, finally made me a Spam pizza.
You had to bring in the Spam, though.
No, I think she brought it in herself.
Nope.
She surprised me.
Nope. Then I brought in the Spam.
Oh, somebody. I know, I
didn't.
They didn't
have Spam.
No. But she just made it 1 year. And if you ever make a Spam pizza, in my opinion, you're probably better off pre-frying the Spam to give it a little consistency. Because although it tasted good and like Spam, it was kind of soft. You know, it wasn't, which if you've ever eaten Spam raw, it is. It is soft. But Corey, have you ever eaten Spam raw?
You know what? I got to be honest. I don't think I've ever eaten Spam of any kind.
Oh, it's good. It's good. I'm telling you, you want to make some serious money, just bring a boatload of Spam to Hawaii, man. And you'll be a god there because they just love it there. So, yeah. So you're talking 2 hours later, we come back, and there's Eric working on his comics.
Hasn't moved.
Nope. He would bring the comics to him, and he's still working. And I don't recall if he was ready to be rung up then or if, well, you know, he got another half hour or something. But.
Now, one of the lines.
One
of the lines we always used with Eric. Eric would come in while we were unpacking books on a Friday, and we would take them, and, you know, we have to count them up. And it got to the point where no matter what it was, if there was only like two or three of something or something was magazine, something didn't look like a regular comic, he would go, "Is that for me?" And that became one of our lines for years. Is that for me?
I mean, we're really, we
would
just
laugh, and people would look at us as if we were insane. Kind of like Hi Rob.
Hi Rob.
Hi Rob.
The other one, there was a guy who would wander up and down the streets, and I only saw him once in the 9 or 10 years I owned Hot Comics, but he would just be saying to himself, "I like a Superman," but he would change his song depending on where he was. Like if he walked in front of the pet store, "I get me a dog" or whatever. And he only walked by the shop once that I can recall, because I was like, "Butch, but that's him, isn't it?" "Yeah, that's him. That's the Superman guy. I like a Superman."
And the reason Butch called him the Superman guy is he came in the shop one time and was looking at stuff. And Butch and I were there because we were watching the shop. Joe was off getting gas, which we now to this day believe that meant he went to a movie and went home. So the guy's in the shop and he's looking at stuff. And finally, I don't remember if it was Butch or I. One of the two of us went up and said, "Can we get it? Can we help you find anything?" And he just looks at Butch, because if it was me, he didn't look at me. He looked at Butch and he went, "I like a Superman."
God, you saw him. There was another line that we used to do all the time, because it was just the middle of the day and the door was open. We're just sitting there, and some guy walked by the door. "This is bullshit." And we all looked at each other like, "What the hell was that?" He wasn't necessarily talking to us or talking at us, but he just said it in such a perfect way as he walked past the door right into the shop, and the whole store heard it. And then there was another guy, I can't remember what it was. We were talking pro wrestling, because as you know, we were big on pro wrestling. And his name was Bob, and we were talking wrestling, and he looked up at it and went, "Fake." So, I mean, that's what he was saying. He was just telling us, "Yup, wrestling done fake."
He didn't even. I think the first time he didn't even say wrestling's fake. It's just we were talking about it. He looked up on the screen, and he just went, "Fake. It's all fake."
Hi. Now, do I want to go in the ultimate demise of Eric King, or do we want to save that for another podcast?
Let's do it now, because I'll be honest, I don't know. I just know he quit showing up at the shop at one point.
What had happened? Now, Eric, he ordered one of everything, and after a while, and this happened with a couple people, but with Eric it got more acute, because he got to the point where he had maybe about a long box worth of books that he just never picked up. It would be like every week he would come in, pick up the DC, pick up the Marvels, pick up this, and then maybe pick up some of the independents.
Now, the other thing is, and this was one of the jokes we were making as we would go up to the pizza place and we came back, he bought New Kids on the Block comics and talked about how great they were. He bought a lot of stuff that was just, I don't know, he had to be in his 30s, and he was excited about stuff that we would just, yeah.
I think the only thing he really was excited about was old comics, like the Fangraphic, Aerosline, or I think maybe one issue of Cherry Pop-Tart or Fabulous Freak Brothers. You know, he never actually came out in the 90s when I was publishing, or when I had my comic store. But, I mean, he literally ordered everything.
But he also ordered that's what it was. At the time, you could get the magazines that were aimed at girls age 8 to 12. You know, the Teen Beat, Bop, all of the – he ordered those magazines. And that was why we went, you know, there's just something not quite right about him. But he was just a collector, I guess.
I did find out later. And this was after he was gone, that apparently he bought a lot of those because he was a school bus driver.
And
he wanted
to
know what the kids were talking about. You know, because maybe he tried, you know, to relate. I got to admit, you know, I rode the bus a lot as a kid. And then the bus drivers that actually talked to us and, you know, actually treated us like people, we probably gave less of a hard time to than ones that were just, you know, the typical South Park lady with a bird in her head bus driver, you know. Anyways, it got
anyway
to where Eric, he just had too much stuff accumulated. And we told Eric, you know, we really have to, you know, either cut you off or have you pick up stuff quicker if you can. Or if you want, we can put it out. Again, this is the early 90s. My theory was I could sell 3 copies of anything. If you remember from previous podcasts, because I had to order 3 copies of everything. That was what Cap City's minimum was for any book. So there are even books that if Eric wanted a copy, I would have to swallow 2 copies. Although I got to admit, back then, I don't recall being stuck too often because I could put those extra copies on the shelf, and I don't recall getting stuck with a lot of books. But he, it went on for a while, not too long, but then we finally got to a point where I just told him, okay, Eric, this is it. I can't really, it was the beginning of a preview cycle. He turned into preview and said, I can't order these previews until you're caught up. I said, you're more than welcome to buy stuff off the shelf, but until these back issues are gone, or I should say his pile, we can't order anything. The next day, he showed up, and Pat and I basically were sitting down for our 4-hour marathon of figuring out what we were going to order. And this was back when Pat and I just did it ourselves. This was before, or maybe after, I don't remember. We used to get everybody together and talk about it.
It was after. You only did the round table for a few months.
Yeah, so it was just.
And then you would have me write up a thing that said, and I don't remember when I quit writing it up, but you had me write up a thing where you said, all right, what books do you think are going to pop? And I'd just write you a list of like 20. And then I would also say, oh, and these indies keep an eye on.
Or more importantly, you'd run into some that would, probably don't want to order these.
Yes, I did that a lot too, because the one that you, there were a few where you told me I was wrong. And we'll get to that one after you're done with this. So anyway.
Yeah, and this is where, like, I repeat the story about She, which is why I liked. I comment about this because I just finished reading the definitive She. The book was totally off my radar. I mean, this was during the bad girl glut, where if it was female, big boobs, and sword, it probably would sell. But for some reason, I had 15 people ordering She. And I just went back and I looked closer at it. And I don't recall if you were one of them, Corey, but I said, there's got to be something up with this book because I got 15 people ordering it. And other than, you know, Eric ordered one of everything. And the next biggest guy, his name was Steve. I'll just call it Steve K because I don't know if he wants me using his name on the podcast. But he was a guy who ordered a lot too. But he picked up everything every week. And, I ended up and I think I doubled the order. I said, 15 people order, I'll order 15. If I sell it, I break even. And if you all remember, She went ballistic at the time. So anyways, it was the Tuesday that Pat and I were ordering, and you're talking, we had to get our order into physically bring our order down to Cap City Warehouse by Friday. This was before the internet really was taking off, before anybody used computers to order, and all that was coming, but it wasn't there yet. So, I mean, it was a task, and this was, Pat was working a full-time job. I left my job at Sears and I did the shop full time. And that was part of our business agreement between each other, is that I would get paid a salary. Pat would take whatever he wanted out of it. And, Eric came in with a beautiful run of Uncanny X-Men. And we're talking, this is the John Byrne era. That's when these books were super hot, super rare, and people were nosebleeding for them. And we looked at them and we were like, oh, geez. This is going to take us the better part of 2 hours to get this looked at and figured out. And we only had 2 hours to do the entire previews thing. And so I told Eric, I said, Eric, I don't have time to do this today, but if you want to bring him back tomorrow, I will definitely look at him because I am interested in him. His goal was to use it as trade credit. And it was like, and I just told him, I said, dude, these are gorgeous comics. I don't have time to just say, okay, this is what they are. These are what we would call greater comics. You know, there was nothing more fun as a comic shop owner than if somebody brought in a bunch of comic books that you were going to spend some time looking at versus comic books from the last, year that he just, well, I want to get out of. You know, ones we eventually got to the point where I would offer $10 a box you know, just because if I was lucky, I might get a quarter box out of them or something.
Yep.
Eric looked a bit dejected, left, never came back.
Oh, really?
Nope. Yeah. And it was really disappointing because the next day I was ready. If he had to come in, I would sit down and look at these, but he never came back. We never called. And eventually we just took his books. I think I might have set them out on a box that these are all half pricers, which at the time, if you recall from a previous podcast, we got to start annotating these things. But I didn't get every comic at 50% off. This was always a big thing because, you know, independent people, I could only get like 30 to 35% off their comic. And the distributors would say, well, that's because we're not going to sell as many. And, you know, what that would do naturally to a retailer is you say, well, I'm going to spend more time on the comic books. I'm going to get a 50% discount and I made more money on rather than the smaller press books that I could not make money on. So I put all Eric's independents out and, I was going to lose money on it, but I lost money on it already because they'd been sitting around the shop for months. And, you know, it wasn't the first time I had had people, you know, leave things away. You know, I mean, we had one of our, at the time, mutual friends did it. And if I recall right, I think his sister came in and made him buy them all at one time and get them out of there.
Yep.
Butch did it. And Butch was weird because he could always come in and work it off for trade credit. But it finally got to the point where, you know, I had this big stack of books for Butch. He never came in. So I just put him back. A month later, he showed up. And I think that was... I don't know if I offended him or hurt him or whatever, but, you know, after that, he would come in and he would take his trade credit right away, but he didn't let books pile up. I had a couple other guys do it too. I mean, I remember one Bobo, you know, I'd call people and I would say, you know, I'm going to hold your books till Friday. If I don't hear from you, I'll assume you can't pick them up. If you do want them, just give me a call. I got voicemail 24 hours a day. Just face it, nobody wants to call someone and say, oh, I can't pick up these books. I don't want them, blah, blah, blah. Nobody wants to be negative.
Nobody wants to call up and say, yeah,
I lost my job. Books, fine.
I'm out of money. I ordered more than I can afford. You know, you had one guy who ordered statues. And he was one of the nicest guys who came into the shop. He was. I love talking to him. He was a great guy. Just fun to talk to. Would help anybody. He usually had a story every 3-4 times he came in of one of his friends who down on his luck and he was letting him crash on the couch or helped him get a job somewhere. But he would order statues and he wouldn't have the money to pick them up for months. But then
the deal was is he worked construction. So he would get a huge windfall every 2 months, 3 months. But then he would have a dry period while he waited for the next job to show up. And when I had the big store, it wasn't a major deal because, you know, I had two or three guys buying statues for me at the time. So to hold one wasn't a big deal. When I had the smaller shop, Crazy Comics, then it was more of a deal because a lot of money would get tied up. And the problem with the statues were pretty much the same problem with, you know, comics that never showed up. I mean, you're buying statues to show up in 9 months from now. You know, it's not like you're buying them for 2 months. So he might go months without statues and all of a sudden 5 statues show up at once and he's in the middle of his dry period. You know, and that, again, at the big shop, not as big a concern because I had other people. You know, basically what it was is the people who come in and picked up their books and stuff weekly were subsidizing the people who only came in once a week. Or once a month. Or couldn't come in, you know, for whatever reason. So it's just, you know, it's just one of those things that it's the way it is with comics. I mean, if I'm going to hold comics for you, even on a pull and hold service, I'm giving you a free loan. Because for the most part, most comic people pay their stuff, comic retailers pay their stuff the day they pick it up. In some cases, you got to pay with certified funds. Until you get a credit rating going. And, you know, if I'm going to hold them for months on end, I don't have problems with that. I mean, one of my buddies, Willie, I mean, he'd come in every 6 months. I had a couple guys, go overseas, you know, back when, the Iraqi wars were cranking up and they would, No, actually, that was the 90s. They must have been just deployed overseas or something, because the Gulf War...
Yeah, there were still deployments over there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because the original Gulf War was over, but the 9-11 stuff, you know, this didn't start yet. But, yeah, they would be gone for a month and or a year. And I said, no problem. I'll hang on to them. I had a couple guys in northern Minnesota, and to this day I feel bad because, you know, we'd send them their stuff once a month, and then I would get reports back that they were missing stuff because we mispulled it. And the problem was is they would call and tell one of the other employees, and to this day I'll swear I never got the messages because if I'd have known they were missing stuff, I would have given them my copy or whatever, you know. It was just one of those things, you know, that – it's just bad service, you know, and like I said, here's a decade later, I still feel bad about it. I don't feel bad about kicking the deadbeats out of the store. I just feel bad about it. So, yeah, no, there was one guy, he come in, and I gave him that phone call I was telling about. He came in, and he looked through his stuff, and he took, like, he had a basically a short box full of stuff, and he took, like, maybe an eighth of it. And I asked him, I said, well, what's the deal here? Why are you... Are you putting this? I'll pick it up later. I said, well, that's not really going to fly because, I mean, we've been holding this for months and you come in, you're just picking up this stuff. You're not picking up the other. I mean, what's going on here? And he gave me some bullshit about how we lied to him and we'd misidentified this and that and whatever. You know, this is one of the beauties about owning your own business because you can tell somebody to F off when you want. And I basically told this guy, if I'm remembering right, I said, you know, the discount terms are what they are. You know, there's nothing changed. Nothing's different. I mean, you may have been away for a month or two and never tell us, but I have no reason to not believe you're coming back. I kept pulling it. And that's why we called. We thought instead of just letting him disappear. And he said, well, if I can just put the rest of this back, you know, the other, you know, 7/8 of the box, I'll keep going with you. And I said, no, that's not good enough. Tell you what. I'll keep all the books and you can just go. You know, we're not going to deal with you. And he left.
Yeah.
And I know occasionally to this day, I run into people that tell me about this guy who badmouthed Hot Comics. And it was always interesting because I always had to say, well, was he badmouthing me or was he badmouthing the other owners? And every so often I get where it was a guy who was badmouthing me. And I said, I bet you I know who that was. But, you know, for the most part, I played it straight with everybody.
One of the things I remember were the people who you had a discount structure that was based on how many books you bought.
And I'll run it down quick. I think it was 1 to 50 was 15%. No. If you ordered over 150 books a month, you got 30. If you ordered 100 to 149, you got 25, and then it went 20.
Now, hold on. There's a caveat there. It wasn't 150 books a month. You had 150 titles on your list. So it could be stuff like She that came out every 4 to 5 months. As long as there was a title on the list, it counted.
And then I would also go through every month, and I would delete titles, i.e. like we talked about Battle Chasers, that kind of fell off the face of the planet. So if it was a miniseries, and when it was over, it was over. And what I would do in a case of a book like Battle Chasers that just disappeared off the face of the earth, I'd remove it from the system, but I would keep it in a spiral notebook. Because I just used a simple spreadsheet program that we had bought from another retailer we knew to track everything. And so if a book stopped coming out but might come out in the future, I would take it off the system, but I would keep it in a physical book. So if all of a sudden a Battle Chaser showed up out of nowhere, I still had a list of who wanted them. Because back then, remember, the comic companies had virtually 5 months before a book was canceled or considered returnable. I mean, you're talking 2 months from when I ordered it, 90 days from the day it was supposed to get there, and Diamond could even pull other fast ones and, you know, well, we'll re-solicit it and start the cycle all over again. And eventually, after that summer of death,
he's gonna puke! He's gonna puke!
Sorry. But after that summer, they tightened things up because all of a sudden the Deathmate read, hey, I said it. Oh, it feels so good. Oh, oh man. When's the last time I had a banana? Oh, I don't think about it. Anyways, after Red came out, they realized they had to change the terms, and that's pretty much when it got down to you had 30 days to do it. I also think McFarlane pulled a fast one with Spawn, which drove everybody nuts, but I thought was brilliant. That's back when it was 20, 21 were late?
Yes.
And so he went forward and he did number 23, which came out on time, and then he said he would send the other ones later to be returned or whatever, resolicited. And
he would resolicit 21 and 22.
And people went ape nuts because they were like, oh, and I think it was Diamond or somebody came out, we're going to make a rule where they have to come out sequentially. Really? Really?
Well, we've told the story before, but this is one of my favorite stories about the shop. I forget when it was, but I told you, if you look, they're soliciting Spawn. I think it was like they're soliciting Spawn 50, and number 41 just came out this month. So what you can do to bump your discount is order a shit ton of Spawn to get the higher discount, because if it was late, you could drop your order.
I think everybody was doing that with almost every Image book, because I know retailers that would do that.
When I first noticed it, you did it for a while, and then you told Brent Moore, and Brent Moore, of course, told everybody. And then I think Diamond went to McFarlane and said, you can't do this anymore, because it had become a nationwide thing. I remember reading about it on one of the websites. It had to be ICV2, where one of the retailers was actually advice on how to get a bigger discount out of Diamond. And that was one of them. But you've been doing it for like 2 years.
Well, I think the only one that I remember doing at point blank, if you remember the Ultraverse.
Oh, yeah.
There was the book Exiles, and it became a four-issue series. But they didn't want the fans to know it was a four-issue series, because at the end of issue four, everybody would just suddenly die. And you wouldn't have known about it.
Spoiler warning!
It doesn't matter. You're going to have to dig in the...
It's 15 years old. Nobody cares anyway.
Well, yeah, except me. I'm trying to collect them all. But what you're talking about is... So basically, they solicited for issue five and issue six. And then by that time, issue four would come out, and they'd realize it was a ruse, and they'd retroactively cancel the two. Well, what I did is, playing along with it, issue five came out. I ordered 150 copies. You're talking, I normally ordered 10.
How did you know? How did you know that issue five was not going to be coming out?
Because Malibu told us.
That's right.
And without the internet, they said, keep this a secret. And I think, it probably leaked, but I don't recall a lot of people, getting upset about it.
But Gerber said that he was up. Steve Gerber's the one who wrote it. And as I've said before, I was in an email discussion group with him. He said that he was upset that it got out to retailers, because most retailers don't keep a secret. But the company was actually really happy about the fact that when issue four came out, they got tons of actual letters. One of the few books they got letters on saying, well, now what are you going to do?
Mm-hmm. But I do remember, because Cap City called me and they said, well, we want to check on this order. And what was, and they, I said, which one? Exiles 5. Oh, what about it? I said, well, you ordered like 150 copies. I go, well, yeah, but it's a ruse. It's not going to be published. But is that what you want to order? And I realized who I was talking to had no clue what was going on either. So I just said, yeah, just let it hang. So I got an extra discount, and I ended up, you know, playing along with the gag. You know, I wonder, God, was Alan Payne with Malibu at that time?
Yes.
Maybe he's the one who told me.
He might have clued you in.
Yeah. Because, and I don't think he suggested to me to order a ton of them, but I think he was telling me about what the deal was. Because Alan might have been the guy who got me the big full-size window Ultraverse poster, which I believe I gave to Butch. If you remember, yep. It was the size of the entire window, and you could see it from the street. I think the only thing as big as that was the Death of Superman poster that DC gave us, where I could put it in the window, and you're talking even the half block from the street to the shop where the parking lot was, you could drive by and see it. I mean, that Malibu poster was a thing of beauty. And I always rallied when I went to a retailer conference and said, you guys need to give me posters like that, that can be seen from the street sign. I'm not talking, you know, so many detailed words that people, you know, can't read it. I'm talking things that have billboard type hit where you can drive by and glance at it and it's going to catch your eye and you'll be able to read it. Then if they hear it somewhere else, they might come in to my store to get it. Because there was a bit of a media push, such as it was for Ultraverse, although I don't know if it went – I don't think we partaked on it. But you had the opportunity to do, TV ads and co-op and blah, blah, blah. And I was just happy with the big sign. And then, of course, it was double-sided, so light could go through it. And then when I was finished, I didn't know what to do with it, and Butch wanted it, and I said – have it, you know, for all the hard work you do, you know. Not that I ever do anything, Corey, but that was a different subject.
One of the weird things about the Ultraverse was that was one of the first companies they said they announced how much they were going to be spending on advertising to try and let retailers know, hey, we're going to be spending money on advertising to drive people into your stores. And it was, you know, it was a pretty big amount because they'd made a lot of money distributing Image. You know, when Image books are selling, you know, 1.5 million and they're shipping 7 or 8 of them a week. And I think the profit margin for Malibu was like 4 or 5%. That's a crazy amount of money. And all they had to do was basically line up printing and get them in the Diamond and Cap City catalogs. But they announced that they were spending, and I think it was like 2.5 million in advertising to launch the Ultraverse. They didn't tell anybody how they were going to spend the money. Cap City had a thing called Internal Correspondence, which was news for retailers. There was also a magazine called Comic Retailer where they were hyping how much they were going to spend. And then the advertising went out. And I remember at the time talking with you about, are you seeing any of this advertising? And you were, nope, haven't seen a thing. Don't know what it is. Like the book, so. And
I do remember that.
Retailers, like after the ad buys, the retailers were like, yeah, I saw it on, I saw they bought this big, they were putting posters in bus stops in like the worst part of Chicago.
That's probably what that poster was I got.
Because it was the cheapest place to buy ads. Or they were buying TV ads at like 2 or 3 in the morning on the low power UHF stations, which would have ratings in the hundreds, you know, so like 2:30 in the morning, here's an ad for the Ultraverse and they're spending $400 to $700 an ad. And just they shotgunned the money out and it did nothing because it didn't go to anybody who cared.
Yeah. You know, I'm reading while we're doing this. I'm just looking through. Peter David at peterdavid.net did live blogging because he stayed at home because of his pets during the hurricane. And like most comic guys, his big line is, how did I acquire this much crap? And what's funny is Tony Isabella is blogging about a garage sale he just had this weekend. And all the crap that he brought up to just sell. And he's like, you know, there's probably more expensive, nicer stuff way back in the catacombs that I won't get to for a few years. But he's also talking about maybe doing another garage sale. I'm like, man, I wish I lived next to him because it sounded like it was a great, great deal. I'll take your crap. But I'm just reading and he's talking about Peter David is like, I'm not loving the way the tree in the front of the yard is swaying. I mean, it's over. He apparently passed through it okay. But if you want to check out the live blog he did, it's morbidly entertaining. And, of course, it was brought to you by the Camelot Papers, a book published by Crazy Eight last July, and I've got to pick up when I get home.
You know what's even funnier than that? Because I did read through that this weekend. I followed a Twitter, Hurricane Irene's Twitter. It was great. And the problem is, you know, now that the hurricane's over, the guy's unmasked himself, and he's a 17-year-old, you know, 17-year-old nerd, and he's changed his Twitter name to Nobody Likes Me Anyway. So I'm going to unfollow because it's all, I don't have a girlfriend and all.
Too bad, kid. You had your 15 minutes of fame. Now go away.
But here's the one tweet I loved. Retweet Hurricane Irene. There it is. I gained 25,000 followers in one day for just blowing people. Maybe I'm more like Kim Kardashian than I want to admit.
Ooh.
Thank you. Thank you.
Just remember, Kim's lawyers, we're just repeating it. We're not originating it.
Oh, come on. If people could sue over that, Paris Hilton would never have to work again.
You know,
does Paris Hilton work?
I don't even think she has a Facebook.
The crickets like that, though.
Yeah, well, you know, they're bored.
Hey, the crickets have been with us for 50 episodes.
Before I give you the epilogue to the Eric King story.
Okay.
And as long as you can assure my wife isn't listening.
You know what? Your wife doesn't listen when you're talking to her.
I was bad today.
Uh-oh.
I've got the middle of the deployment blahs, even though I'm only 20 days away from coming home. And I just went out and I found some deals and I had to buy them.
The on first, crack and hookers?
No, actually, I found a mislabeled Tex Avery's Droopy, the complete theatrical collection at Best Buy.
Oh!
And at the time, I didn't know it was mislabeled because it was listed at $9.99. And I'm looking at it, and I'm like, 24 theatrical shorts, all sorts of other things. And I put it back, and I thought, you know what? For 10 bucks, that's a pretty good deal. I love Tex Avery's stuff. I love his cartoons. And these are the ones I would love owning. So I brought it up, and when I got up there, they rang it up, 25 bucks. And I said, is that right? Because it's labeled 10. And, you know, having worked retail, I'm like, you know, if it's mislabeled, no big deal. I'm not going to buy it. But they're like, oh, no, we'll take care of it. Clickety-clack, clackety-click, 10 bucks.
Yep.
So feeling cocky, as I walked over, I hope I don't regret this one. For 15 bucks, Bionic Woman Season 2. Now, I don't have Season 1.
I will warn you, Season 1 is only 10 episodes.
Which is weird because it's $40.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still 40 bucks regular price.
Although, if you go to Target, it's on deep, deep discount now. They're blowing them out.
I'll come to them in a second. But I picked it up because I figured for 15 bucks, you know, at very least, I believe the second season had my favorite episodes, you know, with the Fembots. It had the big crossover with Sasquatch. And I think it's the one, the two-parter where Jamie fights a sentient computer that's wants to bring around the end of the world. And so she's got to fight her way down into the bowels of this thing to deactivate the bomb. And I just remember as a kid just thinking that was the coolest friggin' episode I'd ever seen. So this is one of those where I pick up and I pray it's as good as I remembered it, even though there is a picture here of Jamie as a pro wrestler having her hand held up.
There you go.
I did also pick up some other goofy things. I picked up the Green Album. Have you heard of this one?
No. Oh, yeah, the Muppets.
Yep, the most celebrated, tributational, complicational new album from today's most sensational artist. And I got to admit, I'm a sucker for these albums. I've got a few at home. I've got one. Hey, Hey, It's the Monkees, a tribute album. I've got one on the Beatles, which is fantastic because it's got Goldie Hawn singing Hard Day's Night, which is orgasmic inducing. It's got Sean Connery saying "My Life." He's basically speaking it.
Kind of like Shatner.
Oh, yeah. And it's got Robin Williams doing Come Together, which is, you know, fantastic. So I picked this up. You know, the other one I picked up, I think, was Saturday Morning's Greatest Hits, which was, you know, a lot of fun. It had, like, Ramones singing Spider-Man theme song and stuff like that. So now I had seen this on iTunes because I was getting bored last night and I started looking at songs to download. And I could have downloaded it for $10, but I didn't. And then when I was at Best Buy, I picked this up for $13. So I have the actual CD in my hand, and I'm like, if that's not a generational change, I still like the idea I can have the CD in my hand because now I can copy it onto my computer and onto my iPod Nano. Because, and I think iPods change, or iTunes, because, you know, my daughter had like about 150, 200 songs, maybe more. You know, she gets gift cards. She, you know, I'll give her $10 to buy songs, whatever. And then her hard drive went and she lost all of it and it's all gone. I believe iPods changed. So now when you download a song, they keep a record of it so you can re-download it.
I wouldn't hold my breath on that one.
Well, I thought they had that because I was looking through all the updates and the whatever. And they said, okay, this is your song library. We'll keep it online for you so you can re-download it. But I didn't get too deep into it. But, you know, damn it, if I'm just not the I mean, I'm more than willing to, you know, call up Netflix and watch a TV show. And even as I wander through, like, Hastings, they still ain't got crap for comic books. But they had a deal going where if you buy one, you buy a regular price used DVD, you get the next one for $1. And as try as I might, as I wandered through everything, I either couldn't find the ones I wanted or there were movies I wanted to see, but I didn't want to pay $10 for, even though the next one would only be $1. You know, which is why I think things like Netflix are going to keep picking up, because I want to watch the movie and I don't mind paying you a little bit of ching for it, but I may not want to own it, you know. Certain movies, you know, Caddyshack, Star Wars, Young Frankenstein. I mean, I watch those, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. I probably watch those every other month, you know, when I'm home. There's other movies I've watched once and I'll probably never watch again. And, you know, being that rentals are kind of going the way of the dodo, even though Redbox is around.
So, I am not a big fan of the Redbox. And I'll tell you why. You go to the Redbox, and first off, they don't have any movie that's more than like 6 months old.
Yep, which is by design.
Yes.
And that may change as things go on, but that was pretty much a concession to the studios and to the stores because, you know, why would I want to rent a movie, a brand new movie for $2-3 when I can go get it for $1? Why still would I want to buy it for $15? Because you remember with Redbox, if I'm correct, you have the option to buy the movie outright rather than return it.
Although, it's kind of like when you would get the rental and you lose it and they say, well, you know what? To replace it, it'll be $74.99. Why? Well, that's the retail price when we bought it. Yeah, whatever.
Oh,
Redbox
yeah, that was...
is like that too. For anything except the stuff they have in their sales section, it is full retail, which not even Best Buy charges.
Yeah.
The other thing is, while they have the movies from the last 6 months, they have a lot of movies. Joe, you know I know movies fairly well. I worked in a movie theater. I like obscure, silly, campy crap. There are movies that they have in there that I look at and I go, I have never heard of this movie or anyone in it. And that's the vast majority. You go through page after page after page to find something you've heard of.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Screw it. Netflix, because I have HBO and Stars, I have on demand for HBO and Stars. And then I buy used DVDs because, let's see, I can rent it for $4.99 or I can buy it for $5. I'll just buy it.
And even so, that, you know, I looked at some of the $5 ones, and it's, I mean, and the reason I mentioned Hastings is because they were crowded as the dickens. And I mean, I spent a couple hours just wandering through everything, looking for something to buy, which is probably why I went ape nuts today, because, speaking of ape nuts, you'll never guess what movie I saw today.
Big Ball Gorilla?
Close. My Idiot Brother.
I think the crickets liked my joke better.
I think it was better. No, I was talking with a friend earlier. He's like, did you see Planet of the Apes? And I was like, no, but I did go see My Idiot Brother. And you could hear the crickets. And he was like, why? I was just in the mood for a stupid, you know, whatever comedy. Plus, the fact is the theaters here only charge, I think, like $6 for the matinee. So $6 I'll go to. Back home in Minneapolis, it's what, $10 to go see a movie now?
11 now at the AMC, I do believe, which is why I haven't gone to see a movie. I haven't gone to see a movie on a Friday or Saturday night.
Yeah.
Since I quit working at the movie theater.
I think the last one I did, and you cackled about this because you quit right before it, I took the kids to go see the last Harry Potter at midnight just because it seemed like they're, you know, it was kind of a family thing for almost a decade, you know, and, you know, my wife didn't want to go because she had to work the next day, but that was just pretty much it. Well, I think we're over an hour, so let me give you the epilogue.
Let me take a look here. Yeah, we're over an hour.
Yeah, so I'll give the epilogue here, and sometime later, and it was still the small comic store, Eric King triumphantly returned.
Dun, da, da.
Now, in between what had happened is I had gotten word that apparently this was Eric's MO at other comic shops, because he did this at Comic College where he would buy and buy, and, you know, you're thinking, good, he's buying and buying and buying, until all of a sudden one day you realize, yeah, he's in every week, but he's got a long box of comics left behind. And apparently he had gone down to Brent's store, Comic Archives, and was going to set up. And I told Brent what Comic College didn't tell me. I said, okay, well, here's the deal, what he did with
you. You had a few people who Comic College, they had burned their bridge there and came to you.
So, and anyways, Eric came back and he was buying stuff. And everybody was like, oh, my God, Eric King's in the store. What's Joe going to do? this was about the same time when I had originally come up with the basically I was going to give out buttons to people if you got Kraid. I mean, you could get Kraid for almost anything, putting a book back on the shelf, you know, not canceling a book you didn't want, you looked at me the wrong way, your heartbeat was playing me, Dairy Queen was out of Dilly Bars and all I got was a Buster Bar. I mean, literally, I was just an ass. I mean, God knows what would send me up. There was one guy, Tim Walker, God bless him. I actually saw him for 20 seconds. A couple months ago, Neil Gaiman did a show for NPR, and my wife got me tickets, which was really cool. And I don't think I talked about it, but it was pretty cool. And I saw him briefly, and I said, Tim, Joe. But we didn't get a chance to talk because the show was starting. And anyways, Tim, he was with us from the beginning, and then he moved away, and then he came back for, I think he was there for a year, and then he left again. And when he had come back, he was giving me, you know, he bought some stuff for me, and he looked at me and said, well, Joe, I want to know if I could put this on the shelf. I go, yeah, go ahead. If you want, pick up something else. And he goes, wow, you're pretty mellow. You're really mad about that. And he goes, I just kind of shrugged and I said, yeah, you know, time kind of mellows you out. And, you know, I thought about I should have made buttons to all these people. I mean, even Uncle Nicky got the full Kraid treatment once. And, you know, just people that I had, you know, for whatever reason gone off on. Here, you have a button that says, I've been Kraid. So everybody was expecting me to go crazy, cray on Eric. I didn't. He came in. He bought some stuff. And
You're getting mellow in your old age.
Well, yeah. And, you know, he bought the stuff and he left. And I even told him, I said, Eric, you know, if you ever wanted to come back, you would take me back. I said, yeah. I said, the only really thing I would do is I'd ask that you pick up everything every week. I don't think I'd be able to hold things, you know, but, you know, if you had things you wanted to buy. He didn't take me up on the offer. As far as I know, he just disappeared into obscurity. You know, even Nick never knew what happened to him. He left, and then people came back to me, and they said, God, I can't believe, why didn't you go cray on him? And I don't know if I ever shared this, but the reason why I finally came to peace with, you know, the tons of books he left behind. And to this day, I still have some of those books in my personal collection. Seriously, if I ever get back and I can find them, I'll just put them up on a Facebook page and just say, these are part of the King collection.
Ooh.
But what had happened towards the end of when he shopped at Crazy or Hot Comics St. Paul, he bought, at the height of their popularity, for investment purposes, almost every Valiant book we owned at the place. You're talking, remember when Magnus won, Solar won?
Oh, God, Carpenter, yeah. Won. Those were scary expensive.
They were going extremely nuts. And he dealt with Pat in terms of cutting a deal. And I believe he bought, like, about, and he talked to, I assumed was his father or whatever, and he was talking in terms of, we should buy these books for an investment. And he dropped about $800 on maybe 100 different comics.
Wow.
And if you go look at your Valiant prices today, well, let's just say I hedged that what he bought against what was left behind and factored in what they were worth. I was at peace with it. I didn't say I was nasty about it. I just said I had to figure it out.
On that note, you have now listened to us blather on about comics for 50 episodes.
Thank you.
Yes, I want to thank the listeners and also let you know that episode 51, that's Joe and I's last episode, because episode 52, they're bringing in the newer, younger, hipper, less continuity-driven hosts. And I doubt we'll do anything special to say goodbye, because we didn't do anything special this time, and I think we had a pretty good discussion.
Yeah.
So, we would like to remind everybody for the 50th time that the comic that we like the least, we still like better than the comic you like the most.